I had my children on the floor. I was on my favourite blanket that my grandmother gave me on the floor like a cat.
And I realised in that moment the potential of what our bodies can really do as women.
Like, I could feel his head. I could do my own internal, like, yeah, his head, I could feel it.
I was in tears. I was just in tears and overwhelmed with gratitude.
Hi, and welcome to the Natural Birth Podcast, the podcast that is bringing embodied birth wisdom from women from all over the world sharing their natural birth stories. Don't forget to subscribe and download so that you can always have access to these empowering and positive natural birth stories.
Hi, my name is Anna, and I am the Natural Birth Podcast host. I'm a former midwife turned midwitch, and I now work with women worldwide, assisting them in having an empowering and natural birth experience and to truly claim their birth as a rite of passage. I offer one-on-one sessions and packages and online courses for conscious mamas who don't want to leave their birth up to chance. I also mentor current and aspiring birth workers in my Sacred Birth Worker Mentorship Program. If you want to know more about me and what I do in the world, then please visit me at thenaturalbirthcourse.com or connect with me on Instagram as The Natural Birth Podcast. Now, if you love this podcast, then please consider taking a moment right now and leave a review. They mean the world to me and is also your way of helping me reach more women around the world with these natural and empowering birth stories. Together, we are changing the birth narrative, one birth story at a time. Happy New Year's, everyone. What a fabulous year this has been for the Natural Birth Podcast. As a podcaster, I got the Spotify Wrapped stats for the year, and it was so beautiful to see how over 3,500 of you beautiful listeners on Spotify had the Natural Birth Podcast in your top 1, 5, or 10 favorite potty. Our rating was 4.9, can't get much better than that, and our top episodes was Ellen Fisher and her 5 home birth stories. But the most shared episode was a magical, spiritual, redemptive home birth in Arizona. And the potty has been streamed in 56 countries. Pretty epic having so many ears on these stories. I want to thank you for sharing your favorite episodes with friends and family and to all the sweet reviews this year. I love you all. As long as you keep on loving on this potty, I'll keep the stories coming. Why don't you pop on into your favorite podcast app right now and leave us a review? Share if you have a favorite episode too. I'd love to know that. Anyways, on this New Year's Day, we have another story for you, of course. Today on the Natural Birth Podcast, we have Sophie. Sophie is a mama of one from the UK, now living in Costa Rica. In this episode, we will hear her story of trusting the maternity care that she was given, as most first-time mamas do, and how it only created anxiety and stress, ultimately derailing her home birth to a hospital birth. This episode will highlight the risks with ultrasounds and inform you to be aware of these as you accept the routine ones, as well as extras. They are not diagnostic. But despite all of this, Sophie had an empowering, positive, and natural hospital birth with her baby girl and learned so much during this pregnancy. She became a hypnobirthing teacher and is now furthering her education by becoming one of my mentees in the Sacred Birth Worker Mentorship Program starting on the 15th of January. I love how having a positive natural birth is what ignites a passion for so many mamas to delve on into birth work. We need more passionate women like Sophie, waking up to the reality of woman's power and birth's beautiful magical design. It's been a magical year, the last year for me as well, as I stepped fully into the role of mentor for aspiring sacred birth workers. And I've felt like I've found my true calling. I love being on the leading edge of the new birthing paradigm and so excited to have a newly baked cohort out there in the world offering their services and another one soon to begin their journey with me. I've poured my heart and soul and all my midwifery knowledge and embodied wisdom into this mentorship. And I love all the passionate birth nerds that have joined in so far. If you know in your heart that sacred birth work is your heart's calling, then there is still room in the cohort starting in 2 weeks. Reach out to me ASAP before the doors close and find the link in the show notes. Curious about Sophie? Find her on Instagram as Yoga and Hypnobirthing with Sophie. Hi, Sophie, and welcome to the Natural Birth Podcast. How are you?
Yeah, very good, thank you. How are you?
I am so great. It is so beautiful to see you. You're all the way over in Costa Rica, but we're actually going to hear your birth story that took place in the UK today. And it's so lovely to see your beautiful face. You're one of my beautiful mentees from my mentorship program. And I'm so excited to see you. It's been a while. So with no further ado, let's dive on into becoming pregnant and deciding where to birth and, yeah, your thoughts around that.
Thank you so much for having me on the podcast, Anna. It's actually such a treat because I always listen to your podcast, and actually your podcast and a few other birth podcasts I was always listening to before I even got pregnant. Oh. As a way, I think, before I even got pregnant, I've always known that. I think, you know, I do the mentorship, so I've been super interested in birth and everything around surrounding birth for years now. So it's a real treat to be on here talking to you.
Yay.
And sharing my story. So we managed to get pregnant very quickly and easily. It was actually during COVID. So I think we just found out that COVID had been around for a few months at least. It was when I got back from my yoga teacher training that I'd done in India. And, you know, everyone was so unsure about what was going on in the world. And we were living in a tiny little flat in London. And we just thought, I'd been tracking my period for a while. I'd been off of the pill for about a year, and I'd finally started having a regular cycle again. So I'd started tracking it on various apps. And so I knew when I was ovulating. I had about a 5-week cycle. I didn't have the standard 4-week cycle that they tell you that you have. So I knew, we thought we'd just give it a go. And I think it was probably, who knows what time, but it happened very quickly for us, and we were super grateful for that. But also we were like, wow, this is just so much to take in with the state of the world and everything that's going on. And I think we'd been pregnant for, so I found out I was pregnant about 1 to 2 weeks into my pregnancy, really super early on. So we did various, I just knew I was pregnant. We'd done various, like, you know, you buy 20 pregnancy tests to make sure that you're pregnant. And I think one of them said you was negative. One of them was positive. And then another one was negative and another one was positive. And I remember calling my sister and she was like, you never get a false positive. You always, if you get a positive, you're pregnant. So we did one of the ones that indicates how many weeks you are. We were only about 1 to 2 weeks. And I think I ended up having really bad, what I now know was ovulation pains in my right ovary. But I was really unsure about what was going on in my body. And so we went to the hospital, which was in West London. And I told them that I was pregnant. I was getting these pains in my right ovary. And so I already had started. They took me in to have an ultrasound, but one of the internal ultrasounds, just to check that, you know, that everything was where it was. And actually, I had to go in by myself because it was during COVID. And so my partner had to wait outside. And they told us that we were having an ectopic pregnancy.
Oh.
So we had all this to deal with in the first couple of weeks of even finding out that we were pregnant. And I came out and I was like, you know, when you're sat there talking to someone, they're telling you that you're having this ectopic pregnancy. And I was just like, I couldn't then go out to my partner and tell him what was going on because I just was so in shock about what was happening. Anyway, they told us to come in a couple of times during the first week just to make sure that my HCG levels were still going up. So I went in the day after, I had blood tests, and I went in a couple of days later, had more blood tests, and they were actually like, you're not having an ectopic pregnancy. It looks like your pregnancy is progressing. So
we've moved. Oh, that's so strange though. So it was in your like fallopian tube, but then it moved into the womb.
Yes. Oh. Yes. So it was so early on still that it was still moving through. But I remember having two or three doctors come and have a look at what was going on, and they'd all given the nod that it wasn't going to be an ectopic pregnancy, but they wanted to keep an eye on it to make sure that the HCG levels were going up. And anyway, I just remember feeling really like, you know, I was so nervous, and I feel like we got off to such a bad start we'd had so much interference already. And then finally they were like, no, this is progressing now, so your pregnancy, it looks like your pregnancy is now in the right place, and congratulations. You can go and see your midwife and your doctor or whatever. So we left. We actually decided to move out of London when COVID started to get really bad. And my partner's family lived down in Oxford, so we moved on to their farm. And I think I decided after that experience of what happened in London and with the NHS and, you know, with being told it was an ectopic pregnancy, and then someone was telling me it wasn't, and someone telling me it was, I just thought the best thing I wanted to do was just have private scans. Because there was a really lovely clinic in Oxford that offers private, really nice private scans. And that meant that we didn't have to go into hospital where there was COVID at the time. So that's what we opted to do. So when we moved to Oxford, I remember going to my midwife, and I loved my midwife. Her name was Jane, and she was working in one of the surgeries near us. And one of the first things she asked me was, do you know how you would like to have your baby? And I've known for years that I would have wanted to have a home birth. So I just told her, I want to have a home birth. And she just went, great. And she was so supportive about it from day one, which was so lovely. And she always was so excited because we'd go and see her. And I felt that we had that connection, which is something I always really wanted when I had from a midwife. And I know so many people don't get. And she was very, very supportive of my decision to have a home birth. But I also think she was quite shocked about it because, you know, it's not something that's really heard of in the UK. So we ended up she knew that we were having our scans done privately. And then we had our 12-week scan done at the clinic in Oxford, and everything was great. So, yeah, we had a really like positive experience there and positive experience with our midwife at the beginning.
Beautiful. But in the end, you didn't end up having a home birth. What happened during the process of your pregnancy?
So we had our 12-week scan, and I think then we went to have, is it the 20-week scan?
You have 20 weeks.
Everything was really good at the 20-week scan. I felt great during my pregnancy. I was waking up every morning, meditating, doing yoga. I was trying to walk like 3 to 5 miles every day. Like, I felt really fit and healthy. So yes, we had our 20-week scan at the Beard Mill Clinic, and everything was great again. And Isla was growing perfectly. Everything looked great. I felt great. So it was fine. And then it's the 32-week scan, isn't it? That's the next.
No, that's not a thing. That's weird. I mean, you shouldn't do another scan after that just routinely.
I think that's what maybe we decided to do then with the lady offered at the private clinic. Mm. And anyway, we went. Isla had been growing on the 35th percentile, and I don't understand. I still don't understand.
Perfect. That's normal.
I don't understand what the percentiles mean. And she'd been growing, and it was doing really well. But then all of a sudden at my 32-week scan, she dropped from the 35th percentile down to the 10th. Mm. So she'd gone up, and then she'd sort of plateaued at the top. And unfortunately, the lady was you could tell that she was really distraught, because she was like, she knew how much we wanted a home birth, or she knew how much I wanted a home birth, but she said that she could no longer take care of us under her supervision. She had to pass us over to the NHS because Isla was considered what they would call a small for gestational age baby.
My goodness.
Yeah.
This is the thing with ultrasounds, first and foremost. They're not benign. There's so many risks with having an ultrasound, and you need to be aware of that when you choose to have them. And you know, there's so many times where it's not the right diagnosis. So I'm curious to know, you know, we're going to obviously talk about your birth story, but what was the weight of your baby when she was born?
So she was 6 pounds 4.
Fine.
When she was exactly, it was she was perfect.
She's perfect.
She was on the petite side, but she wasn't a small, what they classified as a small for gestational age baby.
And can I ask about you and your husband? You know, are you really big people?
No, we're very petite. But she even told us this. She was like, she said she believed that this baby had stopped growing because at the rate that it had, because myself and my partner were petite people and she was just the right size for my body.
Yeah.
I had done hypnobirthing in preparation for my labor and birth. I actually made my partner do it when I was about 20 weeks and I loved it. I was like so into it. And I felt like I was already like, okay, you know, these things are being like progressed onto me, and actually Isla is the right size for my body. Mm. You know, I was already using all these hypnobirthing techniques to try and get rid of all the negative energy that was like surrounding me. And actually I had a lot of people commenting on how small my bump was and how, you know, was I eating enough? Should you be doing yoga every day? You know, all these things that people say to you when you're pregnant, or feel like they can say to you when they're pregnant.
Oh God, people's meddling. They're great at doing that, aren't they? And giving you advice.
Yes.
But this is, I mean, it's such an important story that you're sharing right now. First and foremost, there should not have been a scan at that time. There's it's not routinely done, shouldn't be routinely done. And they're actually quite, I would say, in that if there's nothing that actually is pointing that something's really looking medically wrong, then you shouldn't just do a routine ultrasound at that time. Because again, there's so much, this whole thing about big babies, small babies. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, they're usually wrong. Like your baby, right? Mm-hmm. When they are looking at that time for no good reason, they will find something a lot of the times that they're worried about.
Yeah.
And then in the end, there's nothing wrong there.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. She then referred us to a special ward at the labor ward in the hospital in the John Radcliffe, is it fetal something?
Fetal
medicine ward. She said that's where we had to get the rest of our scans done. Mm. And she recommended, you know, I can't tell you how many people we spoke to, Anna. I called the Association of Independent Midwives. I was chatting to a midwife that had left the system because I wanted to get everybody's advice on making sure that actually I was doing the right thing, because And I heard about stories during COVID, but a lot of my friends were already being told to be induced around 37 weeks. Yeah, they were telling me and my partner that the safest thing for Isla, the baby, would be to get her out as soon as possible so that she wouldn't, you know, die. They told us that she would die if I was to give birth to her naturally. So obviously a home birth to them, for me, was completely out of the question. But we still went ahead and we still got all of the kit to have a home birth. We ordered everything in, our birth pool arrived. I was still, until a couple of weeks before I actually gave birth, I was ready to give birth at home. I had an amazing doula as well, who was so, so incredible. And she was just an amazing woman, and she gave me so much reassurance that I was doing the right thing. But, you know, she only ever wanted me to do what I felt comfortable doing. And she said, if you want to have a home birth, I'm going to support you to have a home birth. But at that time, it was obviously during COVID, case my partner could come into hospital with me, but she wouldn't be able to come into hospital with me if I was to give birth in hospital. So we were writing to the hospital being like, if we have a hospital birth, I want my doula in there with me. And I was told that if I was going to choose to give birth at home, that I wouldn't have no midwives would turn up to assist my birth.
Isn't that shocking? So
they told me they'd send an ambulance and they'd come and pick me up.
Yeah, God. There's no free will, you know, there really isn't when it comes to being involved in maternity care. Like, if you choose outside of what they deem is right, then they just withdraw care fully. And how safe is that then? If a woman doesn't want a free birth, if she doesn't want to have an unassisted birth, you just leave her.
I know. And I just, you know, I was so upset about it. I used to have a bath every night without fail. And I remember meditating, listening to my hypnobirthing tracks in the bath and just crying because my dream of a home birth had been completely shattered. And my partner was super supportive. He was like, if you choose to have a home birth, we're going to do this. We'll, you know, it's our decision. Like, it was, we were this close to having her at home. But anyway, I'll come to that later. But yeah, and even my midwife, Jane, who knew that I was so excited about having a home birth, she was also really upset that essentially it had been taken away from me.
Yeah. So when you went to the fetal medicine specialist, how many scans did you have to have, or did you choose to have with them?
So our ultimatum from them was that I could either be induced early, around 37, 38 weeks, or I had to go in every week to have a scan after that to make sure that my placenta was functioning and that the baby was okay. So I opted to have the extra scans.
And what did they show?
That everything was fine. Everything was perfect. She was perfect. She wasn't growing anymore, but my placenta was still functioning. And I mean, I felt good. And that this is the strongest thing. I just wish I'd listened to my intuition, because my intuition was telling me that the safest place was for her was inside my body.
Of course.
Yeah.
It's so shocking to me when they can see that the placenta is working fine, because that is the key, right? If they can see that the flow in the umbilical cord is good and your baby's doing fine, why would it be better for that baby to exit your womb, where it's obviously every day it is, you know, there's more neurodevelopment and there's so much happening in those last few weeks and days that are so important. And to then do like an induction 37 weeks for a baby that potentially was going to go to 42 weeks. That is way too early, right? That baby. It's shocking to me that they consider that to be a good idea. It's a totally different story if it's truly intrauterine growth restriction, where they can see that the placenta is actually, like, there's a reverse flow, like the flow that's supposed to go from the placenta to the baby is the opposite. And like, there's a lot of clinical, you know, reasons, but just that they're suspecting you to have a small baby? Because that was it's a suspicion.
Exactly.
It's not diagnostic. That's what everyone needs to understand. Like, ultrasounds are not diagnostic. It's a screening tool. That is not 100% correct. And a lot of times it does exactly what happened to you. It creates so much anxiety and meddling.
It was horrible.
Horrible. Yes.
So we actually made it to 40 weeks. We, in total, we got to 40 plus 5 days, I think. So we made it to 40 weeks, and then they wanted us to come in every other day to have a scan. Anyway, we had to meet with several obstetricians, and I'll remember this one so well because it was a man who was telling us, he gave us the analogy that at that point I was trying to understand what the benefits of, and I was weighing up the benefits of being induced and, you know, the benefits of giving birth naturally. And to me, being induced was going to cause more stress on the baby, more stress on me, and actually have a worse outcome than giving birth naturally. 100%. And I was trying to understand why they were trying to force me to have an induction. And I was just trying to weigh everything up. And I was, I mentioned talking to the amazing midwives at Ames and several other midwives who had all left the system, and my doula as well, and just trying to educate myself around what their reasonings were to try and induce us at this point. Anyway, he used an analogy that was like, I knew at that point, I was like, if I was to get induced, you know, you sign up to the train of intervention. And I just wanted to make, I was almost saying, okay, so if I had the balloon catheter, could I then go on to give birth naturally? And he almost said, like, if you're signing up for the balloon catheter, like if you're getting on a plane, you're not going to jump off halfway through, are you? You're signing up for the whole shebang. And I was like,
fucking bullshit.
I know. I was like, okay, great.
But that's how it is. That's how it's viewed in the hospital. If you start with one intervention, you're supposed to go through them all. Mm-hmm, very few can wrap their head around that. You can actually go, actually, I'm, you know, for, and say you have a true medical reason, because for some women, that will be the case. It wasn't for you, but like for some women, that will actually be the case, right? Not many women, but for a few. And you can go like, okay, I'm consenting to this one. I'm accepting the balloon. I'm accepting maybe, you know, breaking my waters, but that's exactly. I want to wait these amount of hours to see if I can just naturally get myself into labor. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to try all these natural induction techniques. You know, I'm okay with this, but not with this. You can say everything like that. You can totally do that, but that's not, that's so rare that women do that. And it's unheard of that a medical professional would even mention that that's an option.
I know. Yeah. You've mentioned the dead baby card a few times before. That was played on us many times, and with every obstetrician that we would see, and the irresponsibility of going into birth and going into labor, giving birth naturally. And I don't know what was any logic, any normal person would have just been like listening to the doctors, wouldn't they? But I was just adamant that this wasn't what was going to happen for me.
Yeah.
Are you ready to join me and others in being a part of the movement of the reclaiming of birth as a rite of passage and as a woman's sacred business? I'm calling you who recognizes birth as a sacred portal and a life-altering event worthy of honoring and safeguarding. You who want to walk alongside women through her rite of passage from maiden to mother and provide a safe, sacred, and physiological birth space. Here's your invitation to join me and other women from around the world in the Sacred Birth Worker Mentorship Program, becoming a sacred birth advocate and space holder, the Beyond a Doula training, starting in January 2024. It's a full year's container of learning, embodying, and deepening into a true space holder and sacred advocate for a woman's rite of passage of birth. By weaving ancient and modern knowledge of her story, women's wisdom, physiological birth skills, and the art of sacred space holding, as well as diving into the variations of normal, medicalized birth, birth advocacy within the current unnatural maternity system, and so much more. This program is unique to its kind in its depth and how deep we go, and also that I offer you one-on-one mentoring with me personally assisting you in becoming the clear channel and the best space holder that you can be. You will be so held and so nurtured and so supported for a whole year inside our worldwide online community as you learn and embody the teachings and skills and start sharing your gifts with the world. If your intuition is ringing clear as you receive this invitation, find out more and apply at thenaturalbirthcourse.com or via the link in the show notes.
So I felt comfortable with my decisions that I was making, even though I was double doubting myself, some like from the pressure that was surrounding us.
Yeah.
So I wish I hadn't, but I'd opted to have a stretch and sweep. He said, why don't you go upstairs right now and have a stretch and sweep with this lady who I guarantee will get you into labor? And oh. I was like, wow.
That sounds scary to me. It sounds like she's brutal. Yeah.
Oh, it was. I've told my friends who have asked me whether they should get stretch and sweeps that actually it was worse than anything that came after that, this stretch and sweep. So I went upstairs. He was like, if this stretch and sweep gets you into labor, we'll book you in for the balloon catheter tomorrow. So here's your appointment for the balloon catheter, and here's your go upstairs for your stretch and sweep. So we went and had a stretch and sweep, and it was just unbearable. It was worse than giving birth by far. And she told me, I didn't had no idea, but she already told me that I was 2 centimeters dilated. Mm. So she found my cervix, she knew I was dilated, and she rummaged around. And I walked away and was like, wow, I don't even know what just happened to me, but that was horrific.
That's obstetric violence. That's it. You know, if you go for a stretch and sweep, it is putting the midwife or doctor puts their fingers inside your cervix, mm-hmm. and sweeps around. And it's not a gentle thing.
It was horrible.
Yeah. And so the benefits, you know, there's no clear evidence that this actually works. And it's mm-hmm. said to be working if you do maybe 2 or 3 in a row of, like, you know, one every day, one every second day. Past mm-hmm. 40 weeks. Now, mm-hmm. in our modern day, they're doing it at 37 weeks, 38 weeks, 39 weeks should not be done. I'm very skeptical to it being done at all, because actually, if you then wait for a few days and someone's rummaging around there, how do you know that by the third or fourth day you wouldn't go into labor anyways? Naturally.
Yeah.
Like, you wouldn't know that. So the evidence is very poor. The risks, however, of a stretch and sweep is that you do get irregular, painful, like discomfort contractions that are false, that doesn't do mm-hmm. anything. You can get spotting, bleeding, and mm-hmm. it can make you feel really uncomfortable, and then it doesn't lead you to labor anyways. And the mm-hmm. risk is also breaking of waters accidentally, mm-hmm. infection, you know, introducing someone else's fingers up to your vagina definitely increases the risk of infection. So I'm not a fan of stretch and sweeps, as you can hear.
Yes. No, I definitely won't be getting one ever again. So what it did was sent me into false labor that evening. So we went home, I think it was a Thursday, and they booked me in to have the balloon catheter fitted on Friday if nothing had happened, on Saturday if nothing had happened. And anyway, I lost my mucus plug. It sent me into labor, or what I thought was labor. And everything was going, but it was quick. It was like it suddenly went from 0 to 100. Like these contractions like went very quickly, and I tried to get, you know, we were wandering, I was set up everything in the flat. I had like these beautiful birth stations. I had affirmations up on the wall. We didn't put the birth pool up, but I had my labor stations and like area I knew I wanted to give birth in if I decided last minute that I wanted to give birth at home. And I had all I just had the lovely space set up. And anyway, I didn't have any time to use that because it felt like these contractions were very like lightning almost. And we were messing around trying to use the TENS machine. I was getting in and out the bath. We called the hospital. I told them I was in labor. I called my doula. I told her I was in labor and everything was happening. And anyway, I told my partner, I was like, you get some rest. I'm going to deal with these on my own. I feel like they're manageable at the moment. It was probably 10, 11 o'clock. And I remember getting into the bath and then getting back out again and going into the bedroom. I put the TENS machine on and I got into bed and I fell asleep. And I woke up in the morning and everything had stopped. And I was like, what? I was like, what's going on? I was like, that's just bizarre. It's like, I thought this baby was coming and now it's everything has stopped. And now I know that that stretch and sweep had brought on this hyperstimulation of these contractions. Mm. And I then continued on the Friday to have contractions, but very irregularly. Like I was still walking around. We went to the supermarket. I was trying to ignore them as much as I could. And I actually had an appointment to see my midwife on the Friday. And she was like, do you want me to perform another stretch and sweep? So I said, yeah, I said, yes. I said, yes. I know. She was like, do you want me to see? Because I was like, I'm just so confused. I was like, I don't understand why I was having these intense contractions last night. And that now all of a sudden they've completely stopped. And I was having what almost felt like Braxton Hicks, like not really contractions all throughout the day. Yeah. And she had a look, she gave me another stretch and sweep and sent me off home. And actually we went to my partner's sister's house and she has a trampoline that's in the ground. And I thought, I'm gonna have a bounce on that trampoline. So we were there at the house and it was like June. I think it was when there was a heat wave. So it was like 32 degrees. And I was just bouncing up and down on this trampoline because I was like, I think this might help get the baby's head down. And anyway, so this is when I was booked in for the balloon catheter. And obviously, and we never turned up because I was like, I'm just going to see how we get on. I'm determined to go into not labor naturally now. I've had a form of induction, but I was determined not to have the balloon catheter. And we went back home and the contractions started again, but they felt different. So I remember them feeling much more manageable. They started off, you know, I was walking around. I knew the importance from my hypnobirthing course and from the education that my doula had given me of staying upright, you know, staying mobile during labor. And the only thing was that because of what had happened to me the night before, I was just ready for them to stop. I was almost like, this can't be real. This almost can't be, you know, what labor feels like. And anyway, I got in the bath. I told my partner to go back to bed because it got quite late and dark. And I was like, I'm going to put the candles around the bath. I put my hypnobirthing affirmations on and I got in the bath. And I think it was that point when I was like, I can't be in the bath anymore because I just knew that these contractions were starting to ramp up. And I got out of the bath. I woke my partner up and I was like, Case, I think we should call our doula Fiona because I'm pretty sure that this is the real deal now. These feel different and these feel like, you know, that this is this is actually happening now. So I think it was about 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning when she came round. And I had like, you know, music playing, and she just like, I didn't even know she arrived. She just walked into the room and all the lights were off, and I was laboring and she was coming up to, she was just, oh, she's just amazing. I love her so much. And she was really helping me to get into different positions. She was putting cold flannels on the back of my neck, and she was helping me in case to work together to go through the contractions as they progressed and got stronger. And so she was really good at telling me to go to the loo all the time. So she kept telling me to go to the loo. She was like, make sure you go to the loo. And she'd come with me, and then we'd go back to labor in the living room. At the stations that I'd set up with like the birth ball, and we had an L-shaped sofa, so I'd like lean into the L-shaped sofa, which was amazing. I remember holding Case on the shoulders, and she'd keep telling me to relax my neck and my shoulders. She was also feeding me because we prepared like little frozen snacks and frozen fruit for me to eat, and I'd stupidly prepared loads of frozen blueberries. So I was eating frozen blueberries. And I think it was about 3 o'clock in the morning. So everything was going quite quickly. And I started throwing up. I was throwing up during the contraction. So the contractions had got so intense, and I was throwing up as well at the same time. And my sick that I was throwing up was purple and red because of the blueberries. And so it was like, I was doing this for probably an hour, and I went to the bathroom. She told me to go to the loo. I went to sit on the loo and I pulled down my pants. I remember seeing blood and I panicked and I was like, oh God, I was like, is this bad? I was already feeling a bit on edge because I've been laboring at home for so long, and I felt these contractions getting intense, and I knew that I had to make that decision about whether to go into hospital or whether to stay at home. And I remember she looked at me and she said, Sophie, do you want to have this baby at home right now, or do you want to go into hospital? And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but is blood usually a sign that the baby is very much on its way?
Yeah, so you can have a bit of a bloody show before you go into that kind of pushing phase. Your cervix is opening, you know, that you vomiting is, you know, after having had contractions for quite some time, it's usually a sign of transition, right? And so transition, and then you had a bit of blood. Yeah, I would say you were probably around maybe 7-8 centimeters or something like that.
Yeah, I think she was listening to the way that I was behaving in the contractions, and I think she knew she was almost ready for me to have the baby at home. And I remember just being like, Case, let's just get to hospital. So weirdly, I remember we lived on the top floor flat. I remember walking down the stairs very calmly, getting into the car. It was almost as if everything had stopped, but like I was very, we took our hospital bag, our doula waved us off because she couldn't come into hospital with us, she wasn't allowed. And then the car journey, oh my God. I remember it being absolute hell, because I'm pretty sure I was pushing in the car but stopping myself from pushing. I couldn't sit down. I had to lie on all, I had to like, you know, hug the seat from the back. And I just had my hypnobirthing, from my hypnobirthing, I'd learned that I wanted to have my eye mask on. I had my big headphones on playing my affirmations. So I looked like a crazy person when I got to hospital. I was wearing this black eye mask, headphones on. So we got to the hospital. I had my eye mask on and my headphones on. And I noticed that my contractions were definitely not as intense as they were, had been at home. They'd definitely gone back slightly. Anyway, they still felt very intense. And I remember going into the labor ward, and it was at this point during COVID when they wouldn't let you go through to the labor ward until you'd taken a COVID test to make sure that you weren't positive. So they asked, I remember they asked, they saw that I was in my zone. They asked my partner, they asked him, like, how long has she been like this for? I think, and I think this is normal, quite normal what happens with ladies that are using their hypnobirthing techniques, but I think they thought that I was a lot further behind than I actually was. So they very casually took me into to this horrible little room. I did a COVID test and then I threw up, and I threw up what looked to them red and blue sick. So they thought I was throwing up blood. So they panicked and they were like, she's throwing up blood. She's coming. She's got bleeding. Cause I stupidly told them that I had been bleeding or I'd found blood at home. So they were in panic mode and I was like, oh God. And they at that point I hadn't had any internal vaginal examinations. They asked me if I wanted one. I didn't want any. And then Case just said to me, let's just find out how many centimeters we are. So I lay on the bed. They gave me a vaginal examination. They told me I was 4 centimeters so I could go through to the labor ward.
You were 4 centimeters.
I was 4. And so what I think I'd got, I was up, I must have been more than 4 before. Yes. When I was at home, I'd gone down all the way to 4. Yeah. Anyway, we went in through to the labor ward. I asked, I was like, I'm only going to ask for one thing. They knew we were coming. They knew we were a special case because Isla was a small for gestational age baby. They wanted to do continual fetal monitoring on us. And I asked, I was like, I just want one thing. I just want to have a water birth. And anyway, they told us that we wouldn't be able to have a water birth because all the water births in the spires, which is the birth center, which is above, wasn't available. So at that point, I was just like, right, I know I had that feeling to push at home. I know that I knew from everything that I'd learned that it's so normal to go, you can go yes. back and forth. And at that point, I just said, just take me somewhere, take me into our own room. We put the suitcase down. I put my eye mask on. I put my headphones on. I got the bed. I was like, I made her give me the controls of the bed. I was like, I put the bed upright so I could labor standing up on the bed because I had to have the straps around my belly because they wanted to do the continual fetal monitoring. And they put us in this room that we were in. And I just got back into my zone. I got back into my rhythm and the contractions went back up from, like, you know, being intense to being a lot more intense very quickly. And I honestly think that the eye mask helped me so much. It just helped me to go inward and ignore everything that was going on around me. And I was listening to my positive affirmations that my doula actually had recorded for me using the hypnobirthing music that I listen to on my tracks. So it was almost like I had her with me but didn't have her with me. And I had these amazing affirmations playing. And I think, you know, we got into hospital about 4:30, and then I reckon I was probably in that room about 5:30, and Isla was born at 7:47 in the morning. So they did another internal on me because I told her that I needed to push. And I had gone from making these very like moany noises to like
yeah,
clenching noise. Like I can't even describe it, but it was very different. It was like the noises had gone from being something completely different to like bearing I was down. It was yeah. pushing. I was yeah. bearing down. So they didn't know that my waters hadn't broken either. And I had completely forgotten about it. I was like, oh God, I was like, I didn't even think. They didn't ask me. We didn't know. I didn't even know if I'd lost my waters in the bath when I'd been in the bath during the night. And she gave me an internal. I lay on my back And she was like, wow, she couldn't believe it. She was like, you're 10 centimeters. You are ready to push. And I was like, I know I'm ready to push. My yeah. body is pushing. I was yeah. like, this baby is coming. And I lay on my side. And I remember I lay on my left-hand side. Case had my top leg and they were both, I had one midwife, and at that point they were changing shifts. And the midwife was like, your waters haven't broken. Your waters are still intact, because she could see the baby's head on and the waters around it. And I was like, oh my God, of course. Like, I just didn't even think about it. And so the other midwife came in and she was like, I'm not leaving. These waters are still intact. So they both were there. I had those two midwives, my partner holding my leg, and I was just, my body was just doing it. They were coaching me, but I had my headphones on, I had my eye mask on, I couldn't hear anything. And I don't know exactly how many pushes it was, but Isla was born pretty quickly. I remember screaming. I was really roaring her out. And at one point they were telling me to get my, like, you know, not lose my energy by roaring it out and bearing down. And, you know, I felt like I had to like scream this baby out. And anyway, she came out with her waters, and then as soon as her feet came out, the waters popped, and then she was born.
Oh my God. What a beautiful yeah. story. That yeah. is, you know, and I understand that the midwife won't just stay around, because it's so rare in hospital to see that, because mm-hmm. most will be meddled with where they break the waters during labor. And mm-hmm. also, you know, having the sac intact usually happens when a woman can stay, like you did, like very calm in mm-hmm. like inward in her own zone, like mm-hmm. like you did, which usually happens at home.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I know I would have had no doubt that I could have given birth to Isla at home, mm-hmm. but it happened the way it happened. And despite being given a COVID test and, you know, the journey into hospital, like, it was still a beautiful birth. And Case is so proud of me. I was so proud of myself. I remember barely believing that she was there when they like brought her onto my chest, because I still had my eye mask on, and Case was like tapping me on the shoulder, being like, she's here. And I was like, and she was perfect, because she was such a well-cooked baby, that she was just so round and beautiful. And like, she was small, she was six pounds four, but she wasn't a small for gestational age baby. So I think, you know, they'd read my notes, they'd known what we'd been through, they were prepared to have like a small baby arrive, but they were like, wow, I think they were both, the midwives were both great. They were very like, it felt really like it was a nice energy in there.
Beautiful. What a beautiful story. If you had a first-time mama in front of you right now who's about to have her first baby, and she really wants to have a natural and empowering birth experience, what advice and pearls of wisdom would you give to her?
Listen to your intuition. Like, if anything, what I have learned from my first birth and pregnancy was how strong your mother's intuition is, and trusting yourself, and, you know, listening to that and believing in yourself.
And what a beautiful thing, though, that you've gone through all of this, because what an amazing birth worker you will now become, having exactly. this embodied experience mm-hmm. of the system and mm-hmm. of navigating that, of having your natural birth in that space with really everything stacked against you from having that, the pressure mm-hmm. of induction, all the meddling. It goes to show that if a woman truly knows herself and follows her intuition and uses what you did, like you did self-hypnosis, you kept, you know, keeping your eyes shut, you didn't engage, you went through it and you kept in your birth bubble, you can do mm-hmm. it. You can do it against mm-hmm. all odds. but an empowering mm-hmm. story for women to hear if they, for some reason, you know, truly need to be in that hospital system, and mm-hmm. you can still do it. But mm-hmm. it really takes a woman like yourself to be determined about saying no to what you want to decline, be strong within your own intuition and your own self-knowing.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, exactly.
Thank you so much for coming on the podcast and sharing it with us.
Thank you so much, Anna. It's such a pleasure.
Thank you for listening. If you love this podcast, then please consider sharing it. Leave a review or make a contribution on our Patreon page. And if you want to connect on social media, then find the podcast on Instagram as The Natural Birth Podcast. Thank you for listening.